today on Living on Every Word.
And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. The whisper of God.
We usually take notice of that which shakes us, shouts at us, or brilliantly flashes before our eyes. But what about the soft touch or the quiet whisper? Today, guest speaker Dave Bollenbacher shares with us three stories from Scripture that focus on what we might hear when God whispers.
Living on every word.
If you have your Bibles, turn to the book of Job. Spelled like Job. Job chapter 26, and as you're finding that, when Peter had his vision in Acts chapter 10, a word came to him. It said, "Do not call common what the Lord has called holy." And sometimes it's easy for me to allow my pursuit of God to become kind of commonplace. And God's been convicting me about my need to recapture the sacredness of who He is and the sacredness of my pursuit of Him. I think it's easy for me in the busyness that is life and the white noise that this world creates to miss God. And I don't want to miss God. And so what I want to talk about this morning are the whispers of God. And in Job chapter 26, I'd like to begin reading in verse 5. "The departed spirits tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. Naked is Sheol before him, and Abaddon has no covering. He stretches out the north over empty space and hangs the earth on nothing. He wraps up the waters in his clouds, and the cloud does not burst under them. He obscures the face of the full moon and spreads his cloud over it. He has inscribed a circle on the surfaces of the waters at the boundary of light and darkness. The pillars of heaven tremble and are amazed at his rebuke. He quieted the sea with his power, and by his understanding he shattered Rahab. By his breath the heavens are cleared. His hand has pierced the fleeing serpent. And behold, these are the fringes of his ways, and how faint a word we hear of him. But his mighty thunder, who can understand?" In the New International Version, I like how verse 14 reads. It says, "And these are but the outer fringe of his works. How faint the whisper we hear of them. Who then can understand the thunder of his power?" I love how Job is speaking about all these grandiose things and works of God. And yet he says, all that we see, the oceans and how they're contained, the skies and the universes that are seen and unseen, that's just the outer fringe of who God is. That's just his whisper. That's nothing compared to the totality of who he is. In fact, you couldn't even stand to hear the thunder of who God completely is. You have no idea of his greatness. And I like that. I like the fact that we can't figure God out, that he's beyond my ability to get my mind around who he is, that he is without limit, unfathomable. It's amazing to me that all we are seeing in the midst of being in the greatest technological advance the world has ever known, we're still discovering that there are complete universes out there that weren't known before. We're seeing just the outer fringes of who God is and how faint a whisper we hear of him. You know, Fritcher a week or two ago was talking about Elijah in James chapter 5 and how his nature is a lot like ours. In fact, he has the very same nature as ours. And that's true. And just like Elijah, we have ups and we have downs. And in James chapter 5, it actually records one of Elijah's highlights where he had prayed that it would not rain and it did not rain for over 3 years. And then he prayed again and the rains came. But Elijah didn't live on that high. And 1 Kings chapter 19, you don't have to turn there, but maybe look at it a little bit later. But I wanted to consider just a few verses, because in 1 Kings chapter 19, we find Elijah burned out, stressed out, angry at the world, angry at God. He's worn out, he's fatigued, he's isolated himself. He's at the bottom. He has bottomed out. And then we read these verses. Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And if you go on to read the story, that's the point at which Elijah encounters God. And that's the point at which Elijah becomes undone. And that's the point at which God reaches down and picks Elijah back up. The whisper of God. That's what I want us to consider this morning. There's a song that I really like, and the first line of the song says, "Oh great God, be small enough to hear me now." And I like the fact that God is great enough to be small enough to encounter me and to know me. That God is great enough to be small enough to hear me and to hear my cries. I think that's one of the greatest attributes of who God is, and I don't want that to be lost on us. Because in weeks past, and appropriately so, we've considered God's greatness in the grandiose. But this morning, I'd like for us to consider God's greatness in the gentle whispers of His voice. And I'd like to do so by considering three very familiar stories, the first of which is found in John chapter 8. And if you've been around here any time at all, you've probably heard me teach on each of these three stories. They'd be in my top 10 for sure. John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. And as we read this, I want you to unleash your imagination here. I want you to unleash your imagination for a minute and place yourself in this woman's position. Beginning in verse 2. Early in the morning, Jesus came into the temple, and all the people were coming to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, and having set her in the center of the court, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in adultery in the very act. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. What then do you say?" And they were saying this, testing him, so that they might have grounds for accusing him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground. But when they persisted in asking him, he straightened up and said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And when they heard it, they began to go out one by one, beginning with the older ones. And he was left alone and the woman where she was in the center of the court. And straightening up, Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you?" And she said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "I do not condemn you either. Go, from now on, sin no more." This story is not about rumors and reputation. This woman was caught in the act. She becomes a pawn in some weird scheme to test and to trap Jesus. And I can only imagine her shock when the door to the room in which she's in with this other man is swung open. And how quickly she has to cover herself. And then as she wrestles and puts up a fight to struggle, as they drag her down a street, taking her to church. I think that by the time she gets to Jesus, all that's left is a muffled sob and just a panting and a gasping for breath. She's exhausted, and worn out, and thrown down at the feet of Jesus. Can you imagine the public humiliation? Center court, center stage, caught in the act of adultery, a biggie. I mean, that's a big one, right? It seems like the perfect time for Jesus to do something grand. I mean, really big, right? It's like divine theater here. You've got the temple, you've got the crowd, you've got good and evil. And yet, Jesus does one of the most bizarre things that I think is recorded in all of the Gospels. He stoops down in the middle of this chaos and he starts writing something in the ground. That's not going to be my first question when I get to heaven, but it's going to be asked. What were you doing, Jesus? What were you writing? I've read somewhere where religious professionals conjecture that he might have been drawing the little fish symbol that's on so many bumper stickers. I don't think so. I don't know what he was writing, but that just doesn't seem to fit for me anyway. But it's amazing to me that Jesus stoops down, begins writing in the ground. He pauses from that to give these accusers conditional license to kill. And then he stoops back down and starts writing again. And then he says, and I believe this is part of the whisper of God, "Has no one condemned you? Neither do I condemn you. Go and from now on sin no more." What does this episode whisper to you about God's greatness? What does it reveal about who God is? What Jesus speaks to me in this is that my compassion and my forgiveness are abounding. The whisper's gently spoken, and it's not spoken with words, but the absence of words. There's no judgment. There's no guilt trips. There's no embarrassing questions. There's no verdict of guilty. There's no "what were you thinking?" It's just "neither do I condemn you." An abundance of forgiveness is given to this woman. And not only that, but an expectation of great hope is instilled in her. Go and sin no more. I love that. Because although I have not committed adultery, I have committed so many grotesque sins before God. And there's not one of us sitting here this morning that is not guilty. Not one of us. And we need to hear the whisper of God that says, "My forgiveness and my compassion abound." That, to me, is a great thing to hear from God. The second story is in Mark chapter 9. Flip back a couple Gospels. And while you're getting there, you know something else? Because I think that God speaks to each one of us differently. But there's something else in that story that I think God whispers. And that is that my presence is enough. You know, there's no grandiose miracle. There's no little mud cakes that are made like Jesus does in other miracles. There's no great demonstration of power. Just Jesus stooping down, saying a sentence, and stooping back down. But somehow it says to me that in the presence of Christ is a safe place to be. And what that woman thought was her worst nightmare turned out to change everything for her. Mark chapter 9. Beginning in verse 14, we see in this episode a weary Jesus, a helpless father, a critically ill son, and some very inept Christ followers. Mark 9:14. "When they came back to the disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and some scribes arguing with them. Immediately, when the entire crowd saw him, they were amazed and began running up to greet him. And he asked them, 'What are you discussing with them?' And one of the crowd answered him, 'Teacher, I brought you my son, possessed with a spirit which makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it slams him to the ground. And he foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth and stiffens out. I told your disciples to cast it out, and they could not do it.' And he answered them and said, 'O unbelieving generation, how long shall I be with you, and how long shall I put up with you? Bring him to me.' And they brought the boy to him, and when he saw him, Immediately the spirit threw him into a convulsion, and falling to the ground, he began rolling around and foaming at the mouth. And he asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood. It has often thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible to him who believes." Immediately the boy's father cried out and said, "I do believe. Help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd was rapidly gathering, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You deaf and mute spirit, I command you, come out of him and do not enter him again." And after crying out and throwing him into terrible convulsions, it came out, and the boy became so much like a corpse that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and raised him, and he got up. A miracle's performed, and this boy is healed, and it's certainly a tremendous demonstration of the greatness of God. His authority over evil spirits, his command of the spiritual world. But that to me is not what God whispers to me here. He whispers something else. And I don't know about you, but I can so relate to the father in this story. What a terrible spot to be in, that since this boy was very little, he's been possessed with the spirit that's tried continuously to destroy him. Do you ever feel like the world's out to destroy your kids? Golly, I do. And I just see the world sometimes beating my kids' heads against the wall, you know? And I just want to do something. And sometimes you can intervene, but sometimes you can't. And we become desperate for God. But the father cries out, "I do believe. Help my unbelief." In other words, I think that what the dad is saying here is, "Jesus, I'm wanting to believe completely, but I can't. I just can't. My head and my heart cannot escape the reality of my circumstances. And the fact is, there's something very wrong with my son. And I can't help doubting. Everyone else has disappointed me, and there's a place in the back of my mind that wonders if you might disappoint me too." Did any of you ever feel that way? Man, I think we all get there. And we believe and we believe and we believe, but there's part of us that can't help doubting. And we struggle. And we wonder if God's going to show up the way that we want him to show up. And you know what a big part of my struggle is? Not believing that Jesus can, but believing that Jesus will. And there's a huge difference there, isn't there? I mean, I believe God can do all things on behalf of me and my children and my marriage and my finances. But I'm left wondering at times and doubting at times if he will. I hear the whisper of God, and what he's whispering to me is that Jesus gives grace to the struggling. Can you imagine if after this father's confession, Jesus chose not to heal the boy? Wouldn't that be just one of the worst stories in all of Scripture? I mean, how disappointing would that have been if Jesus said, "Come back to me when your faith is complete. Come back to me when there is zero doubt, because I have no tolerance for doubt." Can you imagine? But that's not what Jesus does at all, is it? I'm so grateful that in spite of the father's doubt and his admission and his confession that he was struggling to believe, that Jesus healed the boy anyway. I am so grateful for that, because that says to me that Jesus' power is greater than my performance. Because our performances are so lame. I mean, come on. We think we're good. Compared to God, we're wretched. We are wicked. We are evil. We are deceptive. I know myself. I can only imagine you guys. I mean, after all, I'm up here, right? You guys are all... Jesus gives grace to the struggling. And each one of us at various points in our journey do struggle. And we need to know that God's going to work in spite of our struggles on our behalf. That's an important thing to remember, and I think it reveals the greatness, not only the greatness, but the goodness of who God is. The final story is in Luke chapter 8. And I'd like to begin reading in verse 43. A woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his cloak. And immediately her hemorrhage stopped. And Jesus said, "Who is the one who touched me?" And while they were all denying it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing in on you." In other words, everyone and their brother's touching you, Jesus. What? Give us a break. But Jesus said, "Someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me." And when the woman saw that she had not escaped notice, she came trembling and fell down before him and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." For 12 years, this woman awoke to silent torture. Morning after morning after morning. Bleeding, not once a month, every day, throughout the day, for 4,380 plus days and counting. And not only is this a terrible physical ailment, but a Jewish woman in a Jewish culture, she has serious, serious social and spiritual problems as well as a result of this. She's rendered unclean. Mark's account of this passage says that she had spent all of the money that she had on doctors trying to find a cure. And shortly after her money was all spent, her hope followed. Do you know what the word spent means as an adjective? I looked it up this morning. Two words, used up. Have you ever felt spent? Just used up, either relationally or physically or emotionally or spiritually, bankrupt. You are all out, used up. I believe not only was this woman's money spent, used up, but I think her hope was spent as well. Except there was something different about this day. Something that hadn't happened in quite some time. There was a spark of hope because she had heard about Jesus and who he was and what he had done, and she'd heard the rumors and she'd heard the whispers, and an idea was birthed in her heart that moved to her head, that would move to her feet. And it gave rise to hope. And she thought, if I can just touch him, even if I can just touch, and did you notice that? The outer fringes of his garments. That's where the whispers are, right? And the outer fringes. If I can just touch the outer fringe, everything will be changed. Everything will be different. And so she presses on and she pushes in. And I just have this picture of her not even being able to see Jesus because she saw him out of the periphery of her eye and she had to lunge with all that she was to get through this crowd, and she just wisps Jesus' cloak as it passes by. And immediately she's healed, and immediately Jesus knows, somebody's touched me. And although everybody else is touching me, this was a touch of faith. And it gave rise to several whispers, I think. One is, I love where it says, in realizing that she had not escaped notice. Isn't that a neat thing to think, that we do not escape the notice of God? Now, there might be times where you feel like God doesn't notice. You feel like God doesn't have a clue what's going on in your life, or you feel like God has turned his back, but you have not escaped his notice. Your problems have not escaped his notice. Your children have not escaped his notice. Your job situation, your finances. But that's not what God whispered to me as I meditated on this passage this week. There's another whisper, or could be. He uses the word daughter. Daughter, go in peace. Your faith has made you well. The word made you well there is literally saved, has saved you. It's the word that we use to speak of salvation. And I think that that's exactly what Jesus was speaking of. Your touch of faith healed you physically when power went out from me, but now be healed spiritually. And go in peace. Be saved. And I love that he uses the term daughter. He could have used woman and it would have been very appropriate. It would have been very culturally appropriate for him to have said, woman, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. But he says daughter. And I immediately think of John chapter 1 verse 12. It says, as many as receive Christ, to them is given the right to be called a son or a daughter of God. Man, that's a great whisper from God, I think. But that's not what God whispered to me. The thing that God whispered to me as I meditated on this story and read and reread it again this week was a single word. And it's not a word that Jesus used that came out of his mouth, but his actions scream it. And that word is enough. Enough. It was as if Jesus said, 4,380 plus days, that's enough. 12 years of this, that's enough. By saying enough, Jesus is saying suffering has a limit. Jesus invokes a limit to the suffering that we have to endure. And he's made the promise to us. For those of us who have chosen to follow him, there's going to come a day when Jesus says, enough struggling, enough suffering. And to that woman, she got a taste. He didn't set her free from all her troubles that day, did he? Set her free from a big one, huge one. But Jesus said, write it down. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, because I've overcome the world. That's the enough that I think Jesus whispers to us. I thought back as I was trying to think, okay, how do I tie this all together? And really what I've talked about this morning is the greatness of God in three things: his great love, his great grace, and his great hope. The woman caught in adultery, she experienced the great love of a great God that day, didn't she? I don't condemn you either. The father who was struggling to believe, who was so badly wanting to see his son healed, and yet he couldn't quite get there with his faith, Jesus demonstrated a great grace and said, in spite of your struggle and in spite of your doubt, I'm still going to heal your son. And then the woman who'd bled, hope had been used up. He said, here's a great hope. And he says to her, enough. This is enough. Don't take for granted the love and the grace and the hope that God offers us. You know, Job spoke about the grandiose creation of God and the greatness that lies therein. But how often do we become awestruck by it? And I think the same thing can be true of his love and his grace and his hope. We know it's there. It's not going anywhere, and we fail to hear the faint whisper that God speaks to us.
Cottonwood is located 3 miles east of Dublin on Highway 6. For more information on the ministries of Cottonwood, please call us at 254-445-2929, or you can visit us on the web at www.cottonwoodtx.com. Living on